This podcast is one of the many good ones on the Self Defense Radio Network.
Hi, this is Chaz. When I want to listen to a show with practical information from an everyday guy who can't carry a cop just like me, I listen to my good friend Bob Main. Now on with the show.
Hi folks, I'm Bob Main. Welcome to another episode of the Handgun World Podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. This is episode number 422. I'm going to talk about some voicemails that I've recently received and a couple of emails as well. So this is primarily a listener feedback show. I've got to say to all of you who are sending me feedback and condolences and telling me that you're thinking about me and things like that, I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. Matter of fact, one of my listeners just sent me a handwritten letter the other day. Wow, that doesn't happen very often. It's not the first one I've received from a listener, but wow, these days, who sends handwritten letters? It's amazing that I got a letter. And, you know, I don't have the permission to use the person's name, but you know who you are. Thanks very much. That was a terrific letter. I very much appreciate that. It really made my day, made my week, made my month. You know, sometimes when you're on my end of the microphone, you don't realize what kind of an impact that you make on people. All I get to see are numbers on my stats program, you know, the Blueberry stats program. Blueberry is the program that hosts all of my media, hosts all the files so that you can listen to them. All I see are numbers. I rarely get a chance, unless you send me an email or a voicemail or a handwritten letter, I rarely get to know who you are. So thank you very much. It's an honor. Folks, it's an honor to serve you who listen to this. It really is. That's kind of the way I look at my opportunity here on the Handgun World Podcast, is to serve you. I get a lot of enjoyment out of doing this. You know, I've said this now for 9 years, 8 years, 8 years. As a matter of fact, next month in August will be the eight. Is that right? Yeah, I started in August 2009. So next month in August will be the eighth anniversary of the Handgun World Podcast. And for 8 years, I've been saying I get just as much benefit out of doing this podcast as you do listening. And so I guess it's kind of a great thing that both of us have. You get to listen. I get to do this. You know, I'm just an everyday guy. I'm not an industry insider. I'm not a master level competition shooter. You know, I'm not this high end, super duper high end, well known national trainer. I mean, yes, Ben Branham and I go out and we do some classes here and there, but you know, I'm not at the level of some folks out there. But as you can tell, this is one of my great passions. I really believe so strongly in the Second Amendment. I believe so much that people have the right to keep and bear arms, and that's been guaranteed to us. It's been given to us, and the protection has been guaranteed to us from the United States Constitution through the Second Amendment. And furthermore, I think it's a God-given right. I think it's a God-given right to life. You know, the right to life is also referred to the abortion issue, but I also think that it applies here to the Second Amendment issue. You have a right to life. You have a right to preserve your life. You have the right to defend your life against somebody else who wants to take it from you. So that's my introduction for this episode. Let's go ahead and get into some listener voicemails. There's primarily two of them that I want to cover here on this episode. Let's take the first one.
Hey, Bob, it's Matt from South Carolina again. I called a couple weeks ago about the problem I was having with my MP Shield. I've got another update. I followed your advice. I called Smith & Wesson, and they seemed to think it was the magazine springs, too, so they said they were going to send me some. But as of yet, I haven't gotten them. But I went out and I bought another 8-round magazine, and I shot it. And, you know, at first the magazine spring is rather stiff, so it was flawless. It worked fine, and then it loosened up a little bit, and I had two more jams with my carry ammo today. So same problem. The round was just nosediving as it was feeding up, and it was getting hung up feed ramp. So anyway, I haven't heard of anyone else having this problem, but as far as I'm concerned, I'm only going to carry 7-round mags with this gun. So anyway, just thought I'd give you an update. Thanks. Bye.
Well, Matt, thanks for calling in. I'm real sorry to hear that you're still having issues with your shield. I really thought that a new magazine was going to solve your problem. Maybe it's not a magazine issue. Maybe it's not a magazine spring issue. Have you ever thought that maybe it's an ammunition issue? Speer Gold Dot 124 grain, it's good ammo, but maybe your pistol doesn't like that ammo. Maybe try some other ammo. Speer Gold Dot's good ammo, but there's other excellent defensive ammunition that will probably do just as well. I happen to like Corban DPX right away, quite a bit. Corban DPX 115 grain copper bullets. I do like also the Federal HST 124 grain. So you might want to try those. I'm so surprised that you're having this issue with a Smith & Wesson shield. Mine has been perfect in terms of reliability. Absolutely perfect. And, you know, even it's actually, I've never had a single malfunction. And I kind of downplay when somebody says, I've never had a malfunction with my pistol ever before. And I always kind of downplay it by saying, well, you probably haven't shot it enough. Well, that's not the case with my shield. I think I've got 750 to 800 rounds through this shield. And other people have shot it, too. My mom has shot it. My sister has shot it. My nephew, Ben Branham, has shot it. Let's see, who else? My son has shot it a lot. And to the best of my knowledge, it has not malfunctioned. So this is not a case with my shield anyway where it's barely been shot. It's been shot a lot. So I am surprised, Matt, that you're still having those issues. I would get back in touch with Smith & Wesson. If I was in your shoes right now, I'd get back in touch with Smith & Wesson. I'd send them the gun and have them test it and have them try to duplicate the same problem that you're having. I would, at this point, I would probably do that. Thanks for the update. Thanks for calling in. 210-646-1727 is the voicemail number. I know you got quite a few rounds through that pistol, so it's not a break-in issue or anything like that, Matt. But keep in touch. I would like to hear how this turns out. You shouldn't have to be only carrying 7-round mags. The 8-round mags should work. Any magazine that is meant for a pistol should work, and if it doesn't, the manufacturer needs to take care of that if it is indeed a manufacturing problem, if it is indeed a gun problem. And maybe in your case it is. You know, guns are not perfect. They're machines, and they're just not perfect. Not every single one of them, regardless of, I know, Glock's marketing slogan, perfection. Yeah, right. You guys know I'm a huge fan of Glock pistols, but they are not perfect. No pistol is. Matt, would you do me a favor? Would you call back in after you've had a chance to talk to Smith & Wesson again and maybe send it into Smith & Wesson? Once again, folks, if you want to call into the Handgun World podcast, 210-646-1727, 210-646-1727. So there's another voicemail that I want you to listen to.
Hi, Bob. This is Dave in Utah. I was just listening to your episode 420. You're talking about the idea of that maybe we just have to accept this violence. I'd like to build on that a little bit. Michael Bain has spoken a lot about this subject and accepting that these things are a possibility. He talks about having a filing cabinet full of cards, but a pre-programmed response. And if you've never thought about this being a possibility, then you don't have a card filled out for that situation in the cabinet. And so when a situation presents itself, you're going to spend all your time picking through the cabinet trying to find the correct response. And then when your brain can't find that, then you have to try to formulate one on the fly with adrenaline flying. So accepting it, having a plan, thinking about it is the first step. Put that that card in the cabinet, and the biggest thing that it does for you is that it saves time. And also along the lines of what Michael Bain said, if you are on your own, also Masai Ayub has said, nobody cares about your survival as much as you do. So that's something that we need to think about. Largely we're going to have to rely on ourselves type of situation. And so we should be prepared accordingly. All right, Bob, keep up the good work, and good to hear from you.
Hi, Dave. Great voicemail. Most of you know I am also a prepper at heart. I have decided not to put up any more new episodes over at Today's Survival Show. It's just because of the way my life has turned out and all the things that I have been dealing with and still dealing with and things like that. You know, I think I put out something like 200 and something episodes. I said a lot of what I really wanted to say about survival and prepping. And it kind of sounds like what you're talking about, Dave, is that type of thing. Being prepared, having a plan. Oh, by the way, 292 episodes is what I put out over Today's Survival Show. So many, many, many thanks over the years for you guys listening to me over there. And you could always go to todayssurvival.com and listen, or on iTunes and listen to all the older episodes. There's a lot of good stuff out there and a lot of good interviews that I put out there. So, yeah, a plan. You know, now you're talking about the 3x5 cards, Dave, and I'm assuming that you're talking about something other than somebody breaking into your house and you have to defend yourself, because that's no time to be going and finding a card to figure out what your plan is going to be. It should be done before that. But other types of disasters and things like that, absolutely. You know, when you're stressed out, it's hard to think. And even though you've rehearsed it many times over and over and over again, you probably need to have a refresher. But if somebody has busted into your house and they want to hurt you or a member of your family, kill you or a member of your family, you've got mere seconds. Now, you should have thought this out in advance. Having things written down, whether it's on cards or whatever, it's also a good way to review your contingency plans with your family, with your spouse and your kids, and talk about what is going to happen if XYZ happens. If somebody breaks in the house, what are we going to do? If there's an earthquake, what are we going to do? If there's a tornado, what's our plan? There's a hurricane. What is our plan and how are we prepared for it? And having all this stuff written down is a must. It's a must. And, you know, having things like having it written on cards that you keep in the cabinet where family members can go to that and they can pull those cards out and they can review it periodically and things like that. That's a fantastic idea. That's a great idea. That's something that I think everybody needs to be doing. And if you want to write down your self-defense plan, by all means, do that. I think that's important. Write down your self-defense plan. Just don't get up, grab your pistol, and then head for your cabinet to pull out your cards to figure out what you have to do about the bad guy. You should already know that. But this was a good, like you said, Dave, accepting it, having a plan, and knowing how to execute your plan. And the other thing is, have a plan B and a plan C to your plan. Because when the stink hits the fan, when people are stressed out, when it's a bad situation, it never goes according to plan, does it? And so we need to have a plan B, we need to have a plan C, and we need to know exactly what we're going to do. So that was a good voicemail. I'm glad you called that in, and I'm glad you brought that up, Dave. And by the way, Dave, your point about no one cares more about your survival and your self-defense than you, you know, as Mass Ayoub and other people have said, spot on. Spot on. And so that's why we've got to take responsibility. If you're listening to this podcast and you still have not purchased a gun, or you don't have training on how to use that gun, or you don't have all of your family members on board with self-defense, what are you waiting for? What are you waiting for? I think it's your obligation as a member of your family. This is just, now I might, forgive me if I rub some people the wrong way with what I'm about to say, but I think it needs to be said. If you are on board with a plan to protect yourself, but other people in your family are not, what are you waiting for? You need to make that, in my opinion, your primary goal. And if there's someone in your family that just absolutely refuses to get on board with accepting and having a plan that bad things can happen, I get that, but you owe it to yourself to try and to try several times, and you owe it to your family to try multiple times to get them on board, because we're talking about things that could be a matter of life and death, are we not? Okay, I want to talk about an email that I received from a guy named Kirk. This is good stuff. His question is this. He's posing a question to other instructors that have a good reputation, including myself and Ben. And he wants to see if maybe I can clarify this. He says, the first person to put shots on target usually wins the gunfight is a common phrase in the firearms community. But he's wondering, is this actually true, that the first person to put shots on target actually wins the fight? He said he's accepted it for a long time, but he's realized that he hasn't actually seen any studies or stats to prove this. And he hasn't been able to find a study that supports the claim. The closest he says he's found is active self-protection claim, which asserts that it's true most of the time in the surveillance footage that they review. Now, here's a good point Kirk makes. What's even more troubling. He says, even after center of mass hits, it's disturbingly common for the bad guy to be able to continue the fight. Yeah, that's true. You know, that's true. And so many people are teaching, shoot center of mass, center of mass, center of mass. You know, it's been law enforcement teaching. It's been teaching of a lot of other instructors for a very, very long time. Shoot to the center of mass. Yes, it's, you know, Kirk, you bring up a great point, because even after someone takes multiple shots in the center of their body, it is very disturbingly common for the bad guy to be able to continue the fight. And, you know, if he's shooting back and he can still shoot back at you, even though he's taken multiple rounds, the fight's still on, and it's still on in a big way. So, yeah, it's not always true that the first person to put shots on target is going to win the fight. Let me go ahead and say the first person to put good shots on target, good shots that actually stop the aggressor, central nervous system hits. And even though those can take a long time, as Kirk points out in his email, you know, even 15 seconds is a frightening time if the bad guy's shooting back. Yeah, that's true, Kirk. So he wants to know what I think of this. Or is this why we teach accurate shooting on the move? Yes, it is. This is why Ben and I like to teach accurate shooting on the move. And we didn't make this stuff up, folks. People have been teaching accurate shooting on the move for a long time. Gabe Suarez and his team of instructors, probably some of the best. That's where I learned a lot of it, in a couple of other places too. But they're some of the best at teaching how to shoot accurately on the move. And see, here's the thing. Yeah, you know, do you really have the time and the luxury to really focus on a central nervous system hit? Maybe, maybe not. That could take a really, really long time. But why not make yourself a moving target? Yes, Kirk, it's one of the reasons. It's one of the major reasons why we teach accurate shooting on the move. And I'm talking about accurate shooting on the move, not just putting a hit anywhere on target. Accurate shooting on the move. And even if you're not moving fast, but you're moving, you're making yourself a hard target to hit. Here's the evidence of that. Anybody who's been to a competition shooting match, whether it's IDPA or USPSA, what have you, people seem to really struggle, shooters really seem to struggle with the moving targets, whether they're slow moving or fast moving. Unless you have practiced it a lot, people seem to have trouble with that. It just makes sense that the bad guy, if the bad guy's shooting at you, he also or she is going to have a problem with moving targets. You're going to make yourself more difficult to hit. And by putting your body in motion and by moving, if it means that you got shot in the arm instead of shot in the head, wouldn't that be a better situation for you? So, you know, you got to think about that. So, good email, Kirk. Real good. It's a very thought-provoking email. And the question that he posed, you know, is it true the first person to put shots on target usually wins the fight? No, it's not. It's not true. It's not true that it's usually that way. Now, it's happened, yes, but I don't believe. Now, if you're asking me to come up with evidence, I'll do that in a future episode. I will actually take this subject up, and I'm going to look for some things to see if I can find it. But to absolutely say that, for an instructor to say absolutely, yeah, the first person to put shots on target is going to win the gunfight. No, I don't buy that. I don't buy that just because of what we actually know about self-defense uses with a gun, DGUs. We actually know that a lot of bad guys did not stop even after taking multiple shots. And I mean a lot. Sometimes even after taking 8, 10, 13, 14 shots, they didn't stop. Because the hits were not really good hits that are likely to stop. And that's, you know, one of the modules that Ben and I teach in our classes is we teach how to make those shots that are going to hit, that are going to stop. And where to hit the bad guy or where to hit your target or your threat so that you got the best chance of stopping that threat from doing what they are about to do. So, good stuff, Kirk. Thanks for emailing that in. Let's take a quick break, and I'll be right back. Okay, I'm back for the next segment. I want to take this opportunity to let you know that if you want to send in an email, my email address, the best one to use is handgunworld@gmail.com or bob@handgunworld.com. Both of them go to the same place, handgunworld@gmail.com or bob@handgunworld.com. Also, Concealment Solutions is the official sponsor of the Handgun World podcast, and Jason just makes some really, really nice stuff. Recently, a listener just got a Cobra outside the waistband holster, and he emailed me to tell me that it was a good holster. That's pretty much all I use, folks. I love the Cobra outside the waistband. The Black Mambas for inside the waist, the hybrid holsters, they've been extremely popular. The belts that Jason sells, they're very good. The ones that he makes and sells are very good. You can also get mag holder, mag carriers there and everything. So check it out. Handgun World is your coupon code to get 10% off. Handgun World is your coupon code for 10% off on anything you order except for the belts. All right. I want to discuss kind of an evaluation of your concealed carry setup. I've been doing this lately, so that's why I want to talk about it. And I'm real glad for some of the emails and voicemails that have just recently came in because it kind of ties into what I want to say in this. I've been evaluating a lot. And I said this in the beginning of the year that I was not going to buy any new guns for 2017 for the entire year. So far, I've stuck to that promise. I'm dictating this podcast in the middle of July, and so far I have not purchased a new gun in the year 2017. The reason I made that promise is because I really feel that I need to get better with what I own currently. I've got to get better with what I already currently own. And I'm doing pretty well in the firearms category. You know, I work very hard in my real job. My real job, most of you guys know, I'm a salesperson in the hotel security industry, and I've been pretty successful. And the job I had previous to this, I was pretty successful because I learned a craft years ago, which is salesmanship. And yes, salesmanship is a craft, ladies and gentlemen. Somebody that really is a good salesperson, it's a craft. Good salespeople are not crooks, they're not dishonest, and they're not out to just take your money. Notice I said good salespeople. They're not crooks, they're not dishonest, and they're not just out to take your money. So because I've been successful, I've been able to afford pretty much buying any kind of gun I want. And you know, over the years, I've purchased some and kept them for 6 or 7 months, gave them 1,000 round trigger jobs. Some of them I weren't so impressed with, so I got rid of them, and some of them I kept. And so I've been able to have a pretty decent collection of firearms. Good enough for me, anyway. I know that there are people who have a lot more guns than I do. But, you know, I would challenge them to tell us about how much they've shot every single one of them. And have they given every one of them a 1,000 round trigger job? I've given every gun I own a 1,000 round trigger job, except for one. I haven't given my SIG Legion 229 a 1,000 round trigger job yet, working on it. But it's not my regular carry gun yet either. Magnificent firearm, no doubt. Terrific firearm, but it's not my everyday carry gun. Everything else that I carry has that many rounds through it, so I've been able to test it. Now, I'm not talking about 1,000 rounds of concealed carry ammo. I can't afford that. I'm not doing that well. I can't afford that, but 1,000 round trigger job, yes. A combination of concealed carry ammo and training ammo. If it's a gun that's either on my hip or in my pocket that I'm going to rely on for self-defense, you bet it's got those rounds through it so that I know it's going to perform. When I talk about evaluating, I'm talking about sort of standardizing. And I'm a big fan of standardizing. Standardizing your concealed carry self-defense setup. I know a lot of people, and me included, that stick to about 2 or 3 different pistols. And that's it. That's all they carry. It's all they actually carry. Or maybe it's a revolver. But it's, you know, 2 or 3, and that's about it. And they get real good with those 2 or 3 guns. And, of course, same with long guns for home defense. You know, 1 or 2, a shotgun and a rifle, and get real good with them. And I'm a big fan of that. I'm a big fan of that. Because, you know, you're not going to be as good in a real-life self-defense situation as you are on the range. I'm telling you that right now. You're not going to be as good as you are on the range. And if you've ever been in an experience, well, some of you who are listening to this, maybe you've been in a gunfight. I have not, thank God. Thank God I've never been in a gunfight. Ben Branham's been in a lot of gunfights. Talk to him anytime you want. He'll tell you that it's a whole different story when the bullets are flying at you than it is at the range. Talk to any one of our military men and women who have been in that situation. Talk to law enforcement who have been in that situation where bullets are coming back at them. If you know a citizen who's been in a self-defense gunfight, talk to them. And I'll bet you every one of them are going to tell you it's absolutely not like being at the range. So you're never going to be as good in that fight as you are at the range. So don't you want to be the absolute top of your game with whatever gun you decide to carry? I hope so. I hope so. And I hear a lot of stories and I read a lot of things about people that have what's called a concealed carry rotation, where they rotate guns, you know, and it's like every day or two they're putting a different gun on their body and carrying that. I'm just not a huge fan of that, because in my mind, at least for me, and I think for most people who have a quote-unquote rotation, it probably means that they're never going to be extremely good with one or two of those. They're probably just going to be somewhat good at all of them. And you don't want to just be somewhat good in a fight for your life. I think you want to be as good as possibly can, like really good with the gun you choose to carry, because even though you think you're really good, you're not going to be that really good in an actual gunfight, unless you get lucky. And yes, people have been lucky in self-defense situations. Untrained citizens that own firearms never had a lick of training outside their concealed carry class. Yes, they've prevailed in gunfights. They have. Some of it's luck. Some of it's just because they had a gun. I remember when I took Tom Givens' class a couple years ago. You know, Tom Givens talked about all the students that he's had that have come through his classes that report that they prevailed. And they all prevailed, number one, because they had a gun. The failures or the forfeits, as Tom Givens talks about, is because they didn't have their gun with them. So oftentimes the presence of a gun alone ends the conflict. But do you want to rely on that 100%? I suggest not. I suggest that you get some training and get really, really good with what you're going to carry. And not just the gun. What about your belt? If you're a lady, what about the holster that you're using? What about the ammunition that you're using that supplies to everybody? Is it effective ammunition? Have you tested it? Have you tested it to make sure it's effective? And don't just rely on other people's testing. What about you? Have you tested it out of your particular gun? You know, as we heard earlier in this episode, Matt called in with his problems with a Smith & Wesson Shield pistol. Maybe it's ammo related. Maybe it's gun related. Not every Smith & Wesson Shield is made exactly alike. Not every Glock is made exactly alike. Not every 1911 is exactly alike. Not every XD, Ruger, SIG, and so on and so forth. They're not all made exactly alike. So have you become proficient? Have you evaluated? Have you standardized? If you have a particular ammo, let's say, I'm just going to pick a type of ammo. Federal HST 124 grain. If that's your favorite carry ammo, does it work in every concealed carry pistol that you carry? And by the way, I hope you're not doing the rotation technique. I hope you've picked one or two guns and stick with those one or two guns. Does that ammo work well? Does the belt that you have support your gun properly? Does it help you conceal or carry your gun properly? Is it a real gun belt? Because chances are, if it's not a real gun belt, it's going to be inferior for the purposes of carrying a gun. Might be a nice looking belt, might be a nice looking dress belt or whatever, but in terms of the purpose of carrying a gun, it's probably going to be inferior. And I have several belts that are nice looking belts that I wear on business calls. I wear them on sales calls in corporate environments, and they're gun belts. And they're made by Concealment Solutions, by the way. But there's other manufacturers that make really good-looking belts, guys. And they're real gun belts. Yeah, you may have to pay a whole lot more money than you're going to pay at JCPenney for a dress belt. But you're carrying a gun. You're carrying a product that's going to save your life. What about your holster? Please don't skimp on holsters. Don't cheap out on holsters, please. Oh, you know, I see it in the classes I teach or the classes I take. I see it regularly. Holsters, people show up and they draw the gun out of the holster and then they can't reholster it. Happens all the time. And then they put their offhand around the mouth of the holster to try to hold the holster open while they're reholstering the gun, and they're sweeping their fingers and they're pointing a loaded pistol at their fingers while they're trying to reholster the gun. Bad stuff, folks. You know, get a good quality holster. And you're probably going to end up like me with not one, but two boxes of holsters. And you know what? I actually use half a dozen of them. Even though I'm not carrying a half a dozen different pistols, I am using probably six or seven different holsters because sometimes I want to carry the gun in a little bit different way depending on what my mission is. Now, I've heard people say, carry the same gun in the same place, the same way all the time. For me, that's not always possible. So sometimes there are sacrifices that I have to make. There are compromises that I have to make. I can't always carry the same gun in the same place at, you know, every single time because my mission for the day might be a lot different. As I'm dictating this podcast, I'm relaxed. I'm in shorts and I'm in a short sleeve shirt because it's 100 degrees in San Antonio in July. And I'm in the nice air conditioned office in my house. So my mission is a little different today. I'm pocket carrying. But if I were to leave the house, which I did earlier today, I left the house. I took my Glock 43 in a Cobra outside the waistband holster. Most of the time when I leave the house, I have a Glock 19 with an extra magazine and a mag holder, horizontal mag carry pouch. So I've got an extra round. Excuse me, not an extra round. I have an extra magazine in case my gun malfunctions. So I can't carry the same gun in the same place every single time. But that is about the only standardization that I don't do. I'm just encouraging you, make sure that you're evaluating. And make sure that you really take a good hard look at what is it that you're doing. And realize that what you're doing could either cost your life or save your life. Either way, I want to err on the side of saving my life rather than doing something that may cost my life. Now, do I own other guns besides the two or three I regularly carry? Yeah. I just got done telling you not too long ago in this episode that I do. And it's fun to own them. And it's fun to go to the range. And it's fun to shoot them. And it's fun to show them off. And it's fun to go play gun games and compete with them. Yeah, that's a joy to do that. But only two or three have the privilege of being in a holster or in a pocket on my body that I'm going to rely on to save my life. And oh, you better believe that I've trained with them and that I've shot a lot of rounds with them, a lot of practice, and that I've dry fire practiced a lot with those guns. Yeah, you better believe it, because it's true. That's what I have done with those guns. Far more than I have with some of my fun guns. Now, if you're in a position where you only own one or two guns, maybe that's you. You know, maybe you are the person that only owns one, maybe two firearms. And you're listening to me. Thank you for listening to the Handgun World podcast. I appreciate that. You know the old saying, beware of the man with just one gun, because he may know how to really use it. Yeah, and because that's all he or she owns, that's all he or she shoots, they could, if they're practicing, they could be pretty darn good with that one gun. So congratulations. My hat's off to you. So that's what I'm talking about when I say evaluation. And that's kind of about all I wanted to say here for this episode. Kind of a short episode, but I appreciate you guys giving some thought to what I have said here and considering it. And again, I just want to say thank you. Thank you for all the support that all of you have given me. I would be remiss if I didn't talk about a class coming up, because it's going to be the last class that I'm going to be involved in teaching for the rest of this year. And I certainly would love to be able to have you as a student, because we actually will learn from each other. That's my style. We learn from each other. You know, every single class that I have ever taught, whether it's with Ben Branham or myself or helped out John Payne at Juarez International, I have learned from students as well. Yes, that's what I just said. I was the instructor, or one of the instructors, and I learned from my students. And I love that. So I would love to be able to learn from you. I would love to be able to train with you. And August 12th and 13th, I want to say. Let me pull out my phone real quick and check the calendar. Yep, August 12th and 13th. In Garrettsville, Ohio, Ben Branham and I are traveling up there. And we're going to be getting together with Paul Carlson from the Safety Solutions Academy. And you are going to have three instructors that weekend. Me, Ben Branham, and Paul Carlson. It's going to be a great event. You can still sign up for it. The class is almost full, but not quite full. So there's still a little bit of space left. Go to handgunworld.com. You'll see a sign-up link. It's the last class I am going to be involved in teaching this year. I have a lot on my plate right now. And that's going to be the end of it for me for 2017. Now, I may take another class in October or November, but I'm not going to be teaching it. I'm not going to be involved in teaching it. So check that out. You can find that at handgunworld.com. Many of you are making purchases on my Amazon store and supporting me that way. Thank you very much. And the Shooters Club. Hey, there's brand new videos up on the Shooters Club. One of them just went out a couple of days ago. So check them out. Ben and I put three or four different ones up there. Action versus reaction, gun takeaways, and things like that. I think our total video count now is about 70 videos for only $8 a month, folks. How cool is that? Or 75 bucks a year if you want to save, if you're going to be looking at the videos for an entire year. Save a little money and pay the 75. Either way, we'd love to have you as a member of the Shooters Club. And in 2018, we're going to be putting some other benefits out there for members of the Shooters Club, exclusive benefits for people that are part of our Shooters Club. And if you want to sign up for that, there's a Shooters Club page at handgunworld.com. Okay, that does it for this episode. I just want to remind you to read your Bible every day, and remember that the loudest sound that a shooter hears is his wife saying, hey, it's time to go home now. Okay, sorry, that was a bad joke. The loudest sound a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click. Or a click when he's expecting a bang. Shoot straight, shoot safe. And I'll talk to you next time. Goodbye.